In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
You bet. Let's talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joining us here in studio. We're past the popcorn. Happy Monday, Al.
And to you as well, sir.
How was your Easter weekend?
It was good. It was good. We closed Hockey Mom.
Yeah.
I had a show Friday night, and then I had two on Saturday. I had a matinee and an evening show, and we closed things out. And then we got on the road first thing Sunday morning to head down to Cherryfield to do Easter with my in-laws. Sheridan's brother and his family came up and joined us, so it was a big family affair. My sister was there as well. We had a nice, lovely time. I ate a bunch, and then I slept in a chair for a while.
There you go.
And then I ate some pie.
Whoa.
And then I slept in a chair for a while.
I like that.
And then we did some fun game type stuff, and it was lovely. Nice. It was really nice.
Did the Easter Beagle show up with things for Stella?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, Stella did very well. I'm sure that comes as a shock to you and to anyone who has listened to me talk on the show ever. I'm sure they're stunned to know that Stella did very well this Easter.
Graham's taking a shower Saturday night before Easter. Yells out, "Mom, Mom!" She goes in the bathroom. He pokes his head up from the shower and says, "I want to know the truth. Are you the Easter Bunny?"
Oh, wow. Man, shower thoughts.
Yeah. And she was the non-denial denial. It was very Nixonian.
Yeah.
She's like, "Well, no, why would you think that? I mean, Dad could be the Easter Bunny." All right, is Dad the Easter Bunny? Well, God, who knows?
Now you're just talking crazy, right, Graham. Right.
But then, I think if he's figured anything out, it's this. The longer you keep quiet, the better you, the more stuff you get.
See, and that's how you know you're raising a smart kid. I was perfectly happy to allow others to believe what I believed beyond the point when I...
Yes, because, me too.
Well, yeah, like, why wouldn't you?
Right.
Like, it's an incredibly lucrative situation.
Exactly. Alan, you're 27. You still believe in the tooth fairy? You're damn right. And where's my money?
Yes, let's please take inflation into account.
Yes, good times indeed. Well, somehow in the midst of all this with Easter and shows and getting a paper ready, you saw some filmage.
I did. I got to see. I got to see three.
All right. Well, where do we begin?
Let's start with this one. The non-theatrical release of the bunch. There's currently a movie streaming on Netflix called Choose or Die.
Okay.
Sometimes you hear a description of a movie and you're like, well, this is clearly relevant to my interests. And so the description of this movie is a person starts playing an obscure 1980s computer game. In an effort to win a never-claimed prize. But as it turns out, the game has horrifying implications in the real world.
Mm.
And I'm like, wow. I mean, that sounds like just a whole mess of things that I enjoy. So I'm gonna tune in and check this movie out. Unfortunately, the concept is a little bit better than the execution.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie. It starts off pretty strong. The first half is pretty good, but it all kind of comes apart a little bit at the back end. The basic gist: it's a young woman named Kayla, played by Iola Evans. She's kind of struggling. She has a job she hates, cleaning floors at this constantly empty office building, trying to take care of her mom, who's in ill health. Even though the shady drug dealer down the hall keeps coming in and getting up to all sorts of shenanigans with mom, so that complicates things. She's a college dropout, a gifted programmer, but she had to drop out to take care of mom. She still has some buddies from that world, including a guy named Isaac, played by Asa Butterfield, who is easily the most familiar person in this film. So they have a sort of friendship. He digs her, she's not really into it, you know the drill. So they come across this this game, like old school, like on a cassette tape, like that kind of like that kind of old school video game.
I like it.
And they there's a number attached. They call the number, and it's like, oh, so there's this prize attached to it if you're the first person to like fully solve this video game. And so Kayla is like, well, I, you know, maybe that money's still out there. I need financial help. I'm going to try playing this game. And so she loads it up and starts playing. And yeah, and as it turns out, the game is called a Cursor, with a little carrot for the O. Well, it's an aptly named game, Rich, because it is in fact cursed. You know, you're playing, it's a text adventure, which anyone who played video games in the early 80s is familiar with Zork and its like. there, you know, you have, you're offered choices, and these choices lead to really terrible things happening in the world around you to the people nearby. The whole deal is, it's like, you can't not choose, hence the name, Choose or Die. And so she sort of works her way through the levels, and the ramifications grow and grow as she tries to work her way to the final boss to defeat the level and escape the clutches of this cursed video game. It's fine. It's fun. Like, and again, as someone who really loved those old text adventure games, like the first half of this movie, I'm like, oh, I'm into this. Like, I'm really digging it. Like, they've got this nice conceit sort of happening, but then like it all just sort of collapses under its own weight, leading to kind of a, frankly, kind of anticlimactic ending, which is kind of a bummer. Despite the fact that they very obviously are aiming to try and, you know, wring a sequel or two out of this, like from the way the ending was set up. The performances are fine. It's reasonably well made. They've got some fun sort of, yeah, you know, there's something very nostalgic about seeing the green text on a cathode ray, you know, cathode tube screen and blinking cursors and all that. While again, it builds some nice momentum and gets a little bit of a sense of mythology. Ultimately, it just kind of falls apart at the end. Very watchable. It's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. But if you are someone like me who has affection in his heart for that particular period of video game history, you'll have a good time with Choose or Die.
Excellent. All right. So what's next?
Let's talk about the more regrettable of my theatrical experiences this weekend. So I went to see Fantastic Beasts: The Secrets of Dumbledore. Now, I need to preface this by saying this installment is better than the last one. But that is an extremely low bar to clear, because that last movie bordered on incomprehensible. This one you can at least kind of follow. But look, man, like, I get it. I get why these movies exist. Like the first eight Harry Potter movies made somewhere around $7.5 billion at the box office, all told. Like, I get why you would want that gravy train to continue, but the reality is, like, I know the first one was cute in its way, like, but you're building this entire like secondary franchise off like a piece of like ephemera from the original books, like, you know, basically like almost a throwaway bit from those books, from those stories, and now you're building this whole thing. And I understand the desire to have a prequel, and you know, you get a chance to get, like, you know, sexy Dumbledore out there and all that, but I don't know, man. Like, I feel like they're really just wringing every last dime out of this thing. And at a certain point, and it seems like we might be looking at sort of the beginning of the end. Like, it did okay at the box office. It won the box office this weekend. But it is far and away the lowest opening for any Wizarding World sort of installment. And there's a reason for that. Like, it just, the movies aren't really all that good. the story such as it is. You've got it's taking place a few years after the events of the previous film. Our hero Newt Scamander, the magizoologist, Eddie Redmayne plays that part, who he has an Oscar, by the way, folks. There's Oscar winner Eddie Redmayne playing a magic zoologist, looking for this magical creature that is about to give birth. These creatures are particularly prized in the magical world because they can see the future and into men's souls. And so obviously there are a lot of people who have a lot of investment in that sort of thing, including the sinister evil wizard Grindelwald, no longer played by Johnny Depp. He has been replaced by Mads Mikkelsen. Which, you know, frankly, great. I love Mads Mikkelsen. You want to tell me, like, if you wanted to tell me, like, Mads Mikkelsen is actually an evil wizard, like, I will buy that. But anyway, he sends his crew over to steal the magical creature, and they are successful in their attempt. But it turns out the creature had twins, and so there's another one, and Newt takes that one home with him. From there, we reconnect with the aforementioned sexy Dumbledore, played by Jude Law. Turns out Dumbledore and Grindelwald, they were in love back in the day. when they were working together, they did some sort of weird blood magic thing that means neither can rise up against the other, and so they have to put together their various squads to do proxy battle against each other for the soul of the magical world. I'm just listening to myself, I'm like, God, what kind of, I sound like a lunatic. It turns out Grindelwald is seeking the office of Supreme Mugwump, which is the leader of the magical world. Carrie's over here shaking his head in just utter disapproval. And trust me, Carrie, I am there with you. There's a series of manipulations, some subtle, some overt, and he becomes Grindelwald. His crimes against pretty much everybody are just erased for reasons, and so he can, you know, run for Supreme Mugwump. It's unclear how this decision is made. At one point, it's like there's votes, but then it's like, well, if I have this magical creature that can look into men's souls and see the future, maybe that creature can make the decision as to who gets to be the Supreme Mugwump. I'm just going to keep saying Supreme Mugwump because I'm fascinated by the fact that that is a term that exists.
And it's fun to say.
Yes. And so it's up to Newt and his team, including his brother, Theseus, played by a guy who is, Callum Turner, who's too good to be here. Well, let's be honest, pretty much everybody's too good to be here. There's an American wizard named Lally Hicks, played by Jessica Williams. Some other dudes. Oh, and Newt's good friend from the previous two films, the only non-magical dude in all of this, Jacob Kowalski, played by Dan Fogler, who is easily the best part of all of these movies. He's a delight. And Dumbledore's brother, Aberforth, shows up for a bit here as well. And there turn out to be some complex familial machinations at work as well. And blah, blah, blah. Newt and his friends have to stop Grindelwald and his friends before, all-out magical war is declared. And both the non-magic and magic worlds are left in ruins. Look, man, I have affection for Harry Potter. I know a lot of people, especially folks who are a bit younger than me, really loved reading those books growing up. They grew up with those books. I think at a certain point, those people are going to be like, what the hell are we even doing here at this point? And I think we're reaching that that point. And again, like I should say, visually, there are some pretty good moments. These movies tend to be pretty good in terms of, like, you know, spectacle and, sure, you know, action set pieces and stuff like that. Except there's a wildly anticlimactic final confrontation that basically takes place in just some sort of white void, and it's a mystifying decision because it's like you spend all this time with all this elaborate stuff going on, and it's like, oh yeah, so it's just foggy with like magic lasers and stuff. Well, okay, I guess that's what we're doing. As I said, everybody here is wildly overqualified for what they're doing. Eddie Redmayne, you know, there are moments in here where you could kind of see in his eyes a little bit. He's like, man, how many more of these do I have to do? You know, Jude Law is, well, I mean, he's Jude Law. Like, there's always been a little bit of an emptiness there, and it seems to work here. Like I said, with Mikkelsen, it's like, yeah, like, he might just be being an evil wizard, as opposed to acting as anything. He's great. You know, I know there's controversy surrounding, you know, Depp's exit from the series, but Mikkelsen is a perfectly, competent replacement, and you know, that controversy is obviously largely subsumed by the much more damaging in the real world controversy surrounding Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling and her troublesome and problematic views. I'm not going to go into that. I would say Google it, but honestly, if you don't know, you probably don't want to know. It's one of those things where this series is running out of steam really quickly. And as I said, at least this one has a story that you can follow. But ultimately, you know, they're talking like there's going to be 5 of these. Oof. And, you know, if there's 2 more coming, like, I can't imagine what it's going to look like by the time we get there.
All right. Finally, a movie that when I read the description of it a while back, I thought, Alan is going to love this movie. It is right up your alley. So tell me what you thought about Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
You know how sometimes you hear about a movie and, you know, it's, you know, being where we are, like, you know, we don't necessarily get like advanced screenings or, you know, and, you know, like movies tend to do the festival circuit. And so they get sort of, they get their hype sort of train moving through that process. And, you know, you're sitting there and you keep hearing bits and pieces about this movie, and more starts trickling out, and you start, you know, and voices of, you know, people whose opinions you deeply respect start talking about how good something is, like how great something is. And it's just like, and just on and on. And it's like this universal acclaim starts surrounding this project. And you start to, like, you almost start to, it's almost involuntary where you start to, like, sort of pull back a little bit. And you start to wonder, well, it can't possibly be this good, right? Like, it can't, like, the level, the bar has been set so very high. Like, how is it possible that this movie could even approach being as good as these people seem to believe it to be? Most of the time, it's, you know, it's about right. Sometimes you wind up getting, mildly or more than mildly disappointed when you finally see these projects, but very rarely, every once in a while, it's not only as good as advertised, but better. And that's what this movie is. I had so many voices telling me this is a great movie. It's the best movie of the year. Like, it is unlike anything you've ever seen. And yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Wow. With all of those sentiments. It is it's an utterly unique experience. It is a genre bending it's a comedy, it's a drama, it's a, you know, it's a coming of age story, it's a love story, it's, you know, it's a sci-fi movie, it's a kung fu movie, it's a, you know, it's a slapstick comedy. You know, it's an immigrant story. It's all of these things rolled into one, and it should be chaos, which is funny because chaos plays a pretty key role in the narrative. It shouldn't work. It shouldn't stick, and yet it does. And I think that's a credit to Daniels, which is the directorial team who wrote and directed this film. It's Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert. And they are, you know, they've been working together on a number of films, you know, in this sort of space where it's just like it doesn't really, you know, it's difficult to pin down exactly what to call their movies, what genre they fall into, like what sorts of movies they make. But this is to just a complete new level. Like, it's God, it's like it, you know, it digs into the collective human experience and it celebrates all the things that make us, you know, that make us who we are and, you know, the power of the choices that we make and, you know, the impact that's a seemingly small thing can have on both our present and our future. All of this, you know, just a beautifully aesthetically rendered, the visuals in this film, they bounce around tonally and stylistically, with reckless abandon, and yet it all fits together. You might notice that I'm not talking a lot about the actual plot of this movie. And I'm going to try to minimize that as much as possible, because this is one of those movies, and I know I say this sometimes, but I really mean it this time. The less you know about this movie going in, the better. Mm. Like, you can have a fundamental idea of what it's about, and I'll go through that here in a second. But the details, you don't want them. You want to be surprised, because this is a movie that is just driven by surprise after surprise, like wonderfully unexpected choices being made all over the place. And it's just so smart and so heartfelt and so GD funny, and just everything you want in a movie kind of all just sort of wadded up into this wonderfully like bizarre and beautiful package and just kind of thrown at you, and you just sit there and you just take it because there's nothing else you can do. You're just, your hair is just blown back while you're sitting there in the theater. It's just unbelievable. So yeah, so the basic gist, Evelyn Wang, played by the marvelous Michelle Yeoh, she's a Chinese American woman. Owns a laundromat with her husband Wayman, Ki Huy Quan, who, by the way, you may know as from the classic 80s double dip of Short Round and Data from the Goonies.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's great.
Wow.
He's great. Their family is undergoing some stress right now. The laundromat's facing an IRS audit due to some filing irregularities. She's kind of struggling to accept her daughter Joy, Stephanie Sue, her relationship with her new girlfriend Becky, played by Talia Miguel, her father, who they call Gong Gong, which is Chinese for grandfather, played by the always wonderful James Hong. You know, she's always struggled for his approval. He's just arrived from China. And her husband has taken out papers and is thinking about asking for a divorce. Like, all this stuff is sort of converging. It's a lot. But on the day that she, her husband, and her father go to the IRS to meet with an agent for their audit, an agent played, by the way, brilliantly by Jamie Lee Curtis, mm-hmm. There's a moment in the elevator on their way up when Waymond is suddenly... not Waymond. Like, he looks the same, but he is a different person than her husband. And he explains to her very quickly that, she needs to, if she wants to basically save the world, she needs to do some things. And he writes down a series of odd instructions for her, gives them to her, and then immediately, you know, snaps back to, you know, the Waymond that we've grown to know and love. And during the meeting, she finds herself following the instructions, which take her to a different place where she encounters the new Waymond again. And we're gonna stop for a second. He basically enlists her in what is believed to be a plan to save the universe from the multiverse. From the massively powerful chaos agent that threatens to engulf it. How she is intended to do that, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to need to see the movie for yourself, because again, it is marvelous. Because it is a multiversal movie, it allows free rein in terms of stylistic and narrative shifts. And so we move from, like I said, action movies romances, like coming of age stories. There are moments that are, you know, there's animation, and there's you know, silent film, and there are just all these different things, all like brought together, stitched together in a way that is somehow seamless. Like it all makes sense in the context of the film you're watching, even as like you're sitting there and you're like, this shouldn't make sense, but it does. Mm. And a lot of that obviously is due to the talents of Daniels, but a huge amount of the credit has to go to Michelle Yeoh, who gives, you know, she's an incredibly talented performer. Someone who I think is unfortunately underrated, to some degree by American audiences, despite the fact that we've seen plenty of good work from her in movies made on our shores as well as overseas. But it's just like, there's this just combination of this wonderful sort of live physicality and this emotional availability and this just purity of expression that just comes together and makes her just an ideal conduit to tell this sort of story. Because, you know, she and the other characters, Quan does some of this, as does Sue. Jamie Lee Curtis does it as well. They're asked to shift very quickly, very rapidly, and very specifically into variations on these themes. You know, they are characters who gradually shift who they are at various times in various places. And to do so, I mean, without skipping a beat, like it's just such a remarkable piece of filmmaking. My first, like I walked out of there and it's like, oh, you know, it's like, you know, it's like if they if the Matrix was built around an immigrant story instead of a trans allegory. Like that's the sort of stuff we're talking about. Except, like, I think it's a more thoughtful movie than the Matrix was. Like it's like visually, like stylistically, I think that comparison holds. But I mean, in terms of depth of feeling, depth of exploration of ideas, like I don't even know what the comparison is, Rich. Like it's just it really is. You know, you people say, oh, you've never seen anything like it. You've literally never seen anything like this. Wow. And it just, like, I can't say enough good things. It is currently screening at the Bangor Mall Cinemas. I don't know for how long it's going to be there. So if you have the opportunity, just go see this movie and see it in a movie theater, because it is grand and spectacular in a way that really resonates on the big screen.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Downtown.